chapter 10 of the book of Joshua. We've come through victories. Jericho fell. I fell after a little bit of a mishap. Gibeonites, sorry. If there's any Gideons here, I apologize. Oh, they would not do such a thing. Anyway, the Gibeonites drew near to make a deal with them because they knew that they were on the list, the hit list, so to speak. But there was a ceremony between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And in this ceremony, in this natural amphitheater, they celebrated the will of God. They celebrated the commandments. Everybody said amen, and it was all good and strong and right. And he built an altar there of smooth stones, whitewashed, in which they wrote the commandments on. It wasn't carved stone, so nobody could brag about it. It was just simple. Anybody can whitewash a stone. And the priest wrote, Joshua, maybe it was himself, wrote on these stones. And so that was a very memorable moment. The Ark of the Covenant was there. And it was, wow, it was great. Joshua chapter 10, verses 1 to 11. Now it came to pass, when Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and its king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai, and all its men were mighty. Therefore Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, Piram, king of Jarmuth, Japhi, king of Lachish, and Deber, king of Eglon, saying, "Come up to me and help me, that we may attack Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel." Therefore the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon gathered together and went up, they and all their armies, and camped before Gibeon and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp at Gilgal, saying, "Do not forsake your servants. Come up to us quickly. Save us and help us. For all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the mountains have gathered together against us." So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you." Joshua therefore came upon them suddenly, having marched all night from Gilgal. So the Lord routed them before Israel, killed them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, chased them along the road that goes to Beth Horon, and struck them down as far as Azekah and Makkedah. And it happened, as they fled before Israel and were on the descent from Beth Horon, that the Lord cast down large hailstones from heaven on them as far as Azekah, and they died. There were more who died from the hailstones than the children of Israel killed with the sword.
What a story. Not what a fable, what a story.
So Gibeon, a great city, and these guys were afraid. And so they gathered together five kings and all their armies. Israel's reputation, that is God's reputation who favored Israel, frightened Adonai Zedek, the king of Jerusalem. So he needed this cooperation of the four other kings in order to defend themselves from the Israelites. And so there was something about the Amorites who didn't want to make peace. They didn't even try. But so they went the other way and were going to declare war. Keep in mind also that Jerusalem at this time in history was still a pagan city. It was a long time ago. It had been around since before the time of Abraham, making it at least 700 years old at that time. Its name meant City of God, the Holy City. People lived there in that city. It was a home where they raised their children. Not an easy place to leave behind. And lest we consider God unfair for uprooting families, let's remember that before God forsakes a nation, a people or a people, they themselves have long forsaken Him. He's not the first one to draw the sword. He'll put up with a lot, and then the end comes.
Perhaps the worst form of child abuse, if we could even use that expression, but it's common today, so let's use it, is to raise a family giving them everything except the knowledge of the Most High God. Let's not forget the story of Noah, where God destroyed the entire earth except for Noah, his family. And it was for their folly. It's enough. He said, I've had enough. The heart of man is continually evil before me. I've had enough. I'm sorry that I made man. God, divine, holy, awesome, above us, yet being created in His image, it's not hard to know what He's thinking and what He's feeling, depending on how people are behaving. We have some of those same feelings in ourselves. In verse 6, it was common in the culture of the day for slaves to count on their masters for protection. And so Israel knew their obligation to the Hivites of Gibeon. Already, these people had become a liability. Yet in spite of their liability, God sees to it that His will prevails. God uses Joshua's mistake, if you will, in making this deal with them for the furtherance of His kingdom. And I want you to know that today, and we should remember that when we make mistakes. Because God can use it for the furtherance of our kingdom, unless we insist on living out the mistake. Unless we insist on making the mistake a lifestyle. You know what? You reap what you sow. But if we'll use it for a learning experience, we're fine. Verses 7 and 8, so Joshua set off with the Lord's encouragement that he would see the Lord's hand in giving them the victory. Do you see your mistakes as a liability or a learning experience? We have a thing that we use in playing music, like, don't celebrate your mistake. Because if you stop to celebrate your mistake in the midst of the music, you drag the whole music into a hole. The timing's gone. We're all waiting for you to get back on track. No, just keep going. And everybody else will carry it. So don't need to celebrate mistakes. Learn from them and get on with it. The first of these two, whether you celebrate your mistake or consider it a liability or a learning experience, the first will make you want to quit. The second will give you the courage to go on. In verse 9, Joshua was encouraged by the Lord's word, and the business of marching all night fades into the background. He was exhausted when God spoke to him. The Lord told him that not a man of them would stand before him. Joshua believed God, and the battle was on. 5-1. Their odds of failing are great. But your odds of success, trusting in God, is greater, even when it's 5-1. Joshua knew from the Lord's encouragement that he would have the strength, the Lord's strength, to accomplish the task. And yes, he would experience it in an earthen vessel, but it would be God's strength. Please don't mistake the strength as being your own. Please don't think God makes you strong. He doesn't. He is your strength. Trust it in the midst of your weakness. But it will not make you strong. It'll get you through God's will. And you become stronger, as it were, but really it's not even you. It's God. Having more room in your life to be Himself. You want to know God's strength? You want to experience God's wisdom? Let Him be Himself in your life. Stop telling Him how you'd like it to be. Stop telling Him how disappointed you are that it didn't turn out like this or didn't turn out like that. Just go with His will. The one who can take a mistake and turn it into seriously beautiful. Seriously beautiful. But you have to follow Him through. So, the Lord's strength was with Joshua to accomplish the Lord's will. Nothing less, nothing more, nothing else. That's why we experience God's strength, not to do our will, to do His will. To do His will. The will of God will never lead us where the grace of God cannot keep us. Possibly you've seen that on little plaques and stuff. The will of God will never lead us where the grace of God cannot keep us. This is not to say you will never be challenged to be beyond your own strength. This is not to say you will never be challenged beyond your own strength. Count on that one on a daily basis. Count on having your natural ability to cope or to proceed or to go forth. Count on yourself having that exhausted at some point in the day and needing to trust Jesus for the rest of it. That's just how it is. And you can do that and experience God's strength. God has done more in this battle, verses 10 and 11. God has done more in this battle than the people He was working through. That, by the way, is perfectly normal for people who walk in God's will. People who trust God experience more of God than they do of themselves. I don't know. You seem like all very nice people. But on any given day, I can be very troubling to myself. And the more I let God do, the better I feel. Yeah. Maybe you have days like that. Probably not, but maybe you do. Now, the battle was such that the nations Joshua was fighting with were getting away. Okay, five kings going in every direction, if you can imagine it. Probably the same way for a while, then they would have split off. If they got back to their hometowns, they would be much harder to flush out, and they needed to be flushed out. Well, why? Why couldn't you just win the battle? Because that wasn't God's will. The God's will was to give them the promised land. It was an eviction notice of paramount dimension. That's God's will. Oh, I don't think that's fair. I don't think... You know what? Seriously. Do you want to know God or not? Because if we keep fiddling around telling God He doesn't know what He's doing, all you're going to have is your own preferred fashion of religion. You'll call yourself a Christian. You'll fit in with a crowd. You'll shake hands. All the rest of it. But if you don't let God be God, you're never going to know Him. He was the God of the Hebrews. If what you said you knew didn't work out in your experience, you didn't know what you're talking about. Seriously. God is waiting to do the application. He does download faithfully all the time. Puts the hay in the manger all the time. And He expects that horse, pardon me, Sheila, gets in my head what you said. He expects that horse that ate the hay to do what it was meant to do. Same thing with us. We're not saved by doing, but our doing proves that we're saved. What? Yes, exactly. So, in Joshua 10, verses 12 to 14, then Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel, and he said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still and the moon stopped till the people had revenge upon their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven and did not hasten to go down for but a whole day. And there has been no day like it. There has been no day like that before it or after it that the Lord heeded the voice of a man. So the Lord fought for Israel. We'll explain that a bit when we get to it. So Joshua spoke to the Lord, and what Joshua said was the Lord's idea. That's the qualifier for those two verses, right there in that first bit. The Lord spoke to Joshua, so what Joshua said was what the Lord had said to Joshua. So when you think of it as being man's word and ask what you like, and God says in God's word He has to give you what you want, think about it. The Lord had spoken to Joshua, then what did Joshua say next? Actually, I can see it happening as Joshua being just like exhausted and panicking because they're getting away and he doesn't know what he's going to do. And at that moment, before Joshua said a word, the Lord spoke to him. God is that close. Jesus said that men should always pray and not faint. Absolutely. But you know God can do His will through your life without you even asking Him. If you're open to it. Well, how do you become open? Desperateness will open you up pretty quick. Desperateness is good to open you up. Why do you think miracles are so impossible for us to do? Because it makes us desperate. And then God gets a moment to to let us know how close He is and wants to be, to live there in that place in your life. Note verse 14, God did not heed the will of man, only the voice of a man. God has spoken to Joshua. His will was within Joshua. Because that particular man was asking only for what he knew to be the will of God in that moment. Joshua. He spoke what God had wanted him to speak. God had spoken to Joshua. In John 14:13, Jesus says that if we ask anything in His name, He will do it, that the Father might be glorified in the Son. So if you isolate that verse, wow, you're in so much trouble. You're burning up so much religious energy with nothing happening. Pretty much guarantee it. Also in John 15, we see the basic concept of asking in the name of Jesus. I get that. What can we conclude from this? Whatever we ask for in God's will is granted. Whatever is not, will not be. Sometimes He'll say no because that's within His will. Sometimes He'll say no because you're so far out in left field. There's no way He'd answer that. It's all about yourself instead of God. Well, how do I know if it's about me or if it's not about me? Listen to your prayer sometime. And be really honest about it. We need to be willing to live for God and die for God, because the most important thing is that we live and die in such a way that God is glorified. That's the most important thing, that we live and die in such a way that God is glorified. Sometimes not receiving is not a problem of faith. I see that clock right again. Not a problem of faith. It can be our unwillingness to accept the will of God. Every child's request, which a parent says yes to, is welcomed with joy. Right? Child likes that. Oh, thank you. Every child's request, which a parent says no to, is not appreciated by them. And they'll let you know it. Even when no is for their best. So why doesn't he answer a self-centered prayer? Because life isn't all about us. We are not alone on an island. We'd like to be alone on an island and have the rest of the world bring boatloads of stuff to us once in a while and then leave. I could live that way. Little log cabin and everybody delivers groceries and it's gone again. No! Life is not all about us. Life is all about God. And so when we ask those silly prayers like that, no. His answer is no. And please, don't think that you shouldn't ever pray for yourself. Now there's a difference here. I pray for myself on a regular basis because I fail God on a regular basis. And I am afraid on a regular basis. And I am nervous on a regular basis. Well, I pray for myself. You should do that along those lines. I pray that I don't embarrass God because I've embarrassed Him so much already in my life. And even as a believer, I don't want to do it anymore. So I pray for myself that I not do that. In that sense, pray for yourself. Put yourself on the bottom of the prayer list, not on the top. That's also very good to do. Lord, grant me the courage to follow You in everything I've just asked You for. Seriously? Yeah, try that one. To follow You through in everything I've asked You for. If I'm a part of it, I'm in. Maybe that's why I'm so scared all the time. Let's leave that there. And next week, let's go on into the sun stood still. I think that's cool. I'm wondering what that did to the astrologers of the day, the sun worshippers and the moon worshippers. It must have been a real setback. You mean they're not in charge of our lives? Bingo.